The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. This is like our 30th BS Report from Orlando. We've been cranking on NBA pods. Joe House here as always, and our friend Steve Kerr. If I'm doing NBA podcast basically all day and you're in town, I'm grabbing you and you're going to have to do it.
I appreciate that.
But I know you've got a very important game tonight.
Huge game. And yeah. A Rising Stars BBVA Rising Stars Challenge.
Oh, is that what it's
called?
Yeah,
it just kind of rolls off the tongue. Yeah.
Interesting. I remember when I was a kid watching that.
Yeah, it goes way back.
Is this your first coaching thing ever?
No, I actually took part in this last year as well. You don't remember?
I don't remember.
Yeah, because I was calling some great plays on the sidelines.
Don't remember that, no.
A lot of strategy involved. I got my best speech tonight to motivate the guys. It's going to be emotional.
Your name gets floated out sometimes as a possible coach in real life.
I could see coaching one day.
Yeah?
I could. I'm very intrigued by it. I love the interaction with the players. I love the idea of every night strategizing for a new team. It's all really intriguing for sure, but it's also a really tough life. And for now, I've got kids in, couple who are in high school, or one entering high school next year, one who's a freshman in college in San Diego where I live. He plays on the team, so I get to watch him play.
Yeah.
This is a great gig. I mean, the broadcast, it doesn't get any better. And for where I am right now in my life, this is perfect.
You get to live in San Diego.
I know. That's pretty good.
Maybe when I get an NBA team in San Diego, I'll make you the coach.
Can you do that?
Yeah. I'm working on it. I just need $1 billion. That's the one thing I'm missing. But I still feel, I've talked about this before, I still feel like when you think about the things that are important to NBA players, San Diego has those things.
Yeah.
And it's like, they go to destinations and they want to be West Coast or big city or whatever.
It didn't work the first time, though, with the Clippers.
Well, but it was the Clippers. It's like maybe if you had a real ownership. But I think it would have to be a small arena. I think they'd have to rethink how they did it. I mean, it's never going to happen. But
Have the businesses Anaheim there. Makes a lot more sense.
It does.
There's so much more corporate money up in Orange County.
Yeah.
So if they ever move back to Southern California, I would think it would be Anaheim first.
I don't remember if I ran this email on a podcast or if I talked about it. I mean, I ran this email in a mailbag or talked about it on a podcast. But a reader had a great idea for... If you build an arena in San Diego, you make it indoor-outdoor. You have a retractable roof, and you play games. You actually play outside.
Basketball?
Yeah, because the big thing with San Diego is like, people in San Diego don't want to be indoors. It's like, okay, well, there's no roof. You're outdoors, and then it would be like...
It's colder than people think in the wintertime during basketball season in San Diego. I went to that aircraft carrier game, Michigan State,
cold?
North Carolina. It was freezing. And
really?
That was in, in November, I guess, early November? It gets cold at night in San Diego, so I don't think that would quite be
Maybe Vegas possible. Is the idea for that.
Oh, it's warm at night in Vegas.
I just like the idea of an arena that doesn't have a roof, and then the players complaining about it, and they're shooting the road guys, shooting percentages, going in the tank.
Well, we played, when I was in Phoenix with the Suns, we played a couple of exhibition games at the tennis center in Indian Wells in Palm Desert.
Yeah.
Two outdoor games, back-to-back years. The players did not like it, as you said. I mean, it's windy,
It's a million things to blame.
There's a lot of things to blame, for sure. The one year, the temperature plummeted after halftime, and it got down to, low 50s, and, we're get Nash out of there. We're worried about pulled hamstrings and injuries.
Right.
But it was a beautiful event. Just the spectacle of outdoor basketball is really cool, and it kind of goes back to your roots as a kid, all that. So it's really a great concept. It's just... pretty tough to actually implement.
So we did one with Nowitzki yesterday, a podcast, which was fun. He's
Dirk's
still in that mode. I won the title.
He's
I don't care anymore.
He's
I'm just happy.
I love Dirk.
We were asking him about the chemistry of last year's team, and he's like, the other team I had that was like that was the 03 team.
Yeah.
And we should have made the finals that year, and freaking Steve Kerr comes in and just has this, hits six threes and things. He's still mad about it. I don't know if he brings that up when he sees you.
Well, we all remember the games that hurt the most.
Yeah.
I can't ever forget the Final Four in 1988.
Oh, yeah.
Had my worst game, shot 2 for 13. We lost to Oklahoma. We were the number one and two teams in the country. And we had a magical team. You know, 35-2 going into that game. It's the only game I actually ever think about still.
Really?
Yeah. You don't think about the good ones. You just think about the bad ones because they gnaw at you.
2 for 13, huh?
Man. And I was shooting.
Nerves
like,
are just not in it.
You know, I had about 3 or 4 go in and out in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I got off to a bad start, and then I missed one badly, and then it was in my head. Then it's like I'm searching. And I never got to the foul line. I was a jump shooter. So it's tough to, as a jump shooter, when you don't get an easy one, you don't get layups, you don't get, you don't get free throws. It's tough, especially in a high pressure situation, to find that stroke, and I lost it.
It reminds me of another huge event, similar circumstances, when I played at the Staples Center with Jacoby last summer, and missed like my first 5, and I was in my head, I was a mess. Yeah. I think I finished like 4 for 50.
but got them up. You got your shots
but
up.
But by the end, like the guys, because we were playing the Clipper sales staff, by near the end, the guys were like, come on, keep your head up, man. I was like, just like, I can't. Because, you know, the sneaky thing about these NBA arenas is you have this glass backboard, and then the seats are 70 feet behind or whatever, and it's like, everything you shoot is short.
Yeah.
And it just takes, I mean, you guys, well, now you don't play anymore, but it takes a while to get used to it.
And I think it's affecting the Final Four. You know, I did the Final Four games last year with CBS, with Jim Nance and Clark Kellogg.
Interesting.
And all three games, the shooting was awful. Yeah. And we're playing in Houston in the, you know, not only in a dome, but it used to be they would tuck the court into the corner of the dome and curtain it off. Now, what the NCAA is doing is they're putting the court in the very center. And the backdrops are awful, and it's drafty, and it's like it's foreign, and the sound is wrong. Like,
the light's weird.
Different, the lighting, and I think it might have something to do with the fact that, you know, if you look at the Final Four the last couple of years, the quality of shooting has been really down.
Then you throw in the pressure and the national anthem.
Right.
They used to say the Silver Dome was like a nightmare to play in.
I never played there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like Bird was like that was the place he hated playing because it was like the combo of the. The seats were way behind the backboard, and then the light was weird. Honestly.
You know where Bird said was his favorite arena to shoot in? The Richfield Coliseum.
Really?
Which shocked me. You know, it's like, that's so random. But he loved, and I played there for 3 years, and it was a great arena for shooting. It was really intimate, and the stands were kind of right on top of you, dark backdrop.
Yeah.
But he said, I heard an interview with him one time, he said that was his favorite place to shoot.
We went to a game in Indiana when we were there for the Super Bowl, and that, I think, is the only arena that's built specifically for basketball.
Yeah,
so the seats are really close.
Yeah.
And we were lucky enough to get these courtside seats that were right under the basket, and they were close to the floor. I mean, the courtside usually are like 5 feet. These were like the whole game, anytime somebody was coming at us, we thought we were going to get pulled over.
No social
media.
Yeah, you weren't like,
hey, no texting.
It's real basketball.
Yeah.
And the thing that just amazed us, because it was Dwight Howard was playing, and it was just amazing to us how physical it was. Like, how many fouls could be called? All of us felt bad for the refs afterwards. I was like, I'm never making fun of a ref again, because I don't know how they do this.
There's certain players, too, when you see them live, even if you're a huge NBA fan, you watch TV all the time, but when you see them live from up close, it's still shocking, and it's still that way for me. LeBron, when he gets the ball in transition and takes off in your courtside, it blows you away. It's like, oh, my God, the combination of speed and strength. And then Dwight Howard, same thing. I remember we had a game when I was in Phoenix against Orlando. Stoudemire standing next to Dwight at the foul line, and his physique is ridiculous. I mean, shoulders out here, narrow waist, just ripped. And Dwight made him look like a little guy. Like how, you know, what is he, 6'4"? No, Amari's like 6'9". But Dwight, his shoulders massive and just ripped and jumps out of the gym. I mean, he's just a freak of nature.
I think Russell Westbrook's like that in person.
Mm-hmm.
Just the amount of athleticism he has. When
it's
you
like
see
shocking.
It in person, you're like,
speed
my God. Yeah, like that guy could have played any sport he wanted. Yeah. He would have been
like a free safety or cornerback.
Imagine him as a free safety.
Yeah.
Or soccer.
It's soccer.
Yeah. And like, swim on a soccer field.
Anything. I felt like I remember the one guy that from 20 years ago or whatever was Robinson. The first
David
time
seeing
him walking into, you know, young Robinson, just walking in and be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like that guy was like built by God to play basketball.
Shoulders out to
here. But now it's like that. I get that feeling with him. But man, he pushes off on every low post move.
Yeah.
And the ref has to, every time left elbow, guy always knows it's coming. So he does this thing.
Yeah.
You know, he pushes his two arms forward and the ref just has to decide every time when there's a foul.
Imagine being a ref in the NBA. That's why, especially now as a broadcaster, it's a lot easier to do. When you're a general manager, it's really hard to forgive the bad calls.
Right.
When you're actually impartial and you watch an NBA game, man, how do they decide from one play to the next what's a foul and what's not? Because the guys are so physical. It's an impossible job.
And this year, they're probably five refs short. So they had a couple retired. They were three short last year. They lost Javi and Wunderlich this year.
They lost some good ones, yeah.
And there are some nights where you're watching the games. And I always know it's a bad sign when both coaches are yelling at the refs. Because usually it would just be the one guy who feels like he's aggrieved. But when both of them at the same time are bitching about different things, like, this is
bad. But that should be a good thing. They're both getting screwed. So
that's even that. You mentioned Amari. Kind of the elephant in the room of this Knicks season is Amari just looks to me like he's past his prime. And I don't know whether it was the lockout or whatever, but you know, you talked about like he was one of the best athletic forces. He wasn't on the Dwight Howard level, but one of those guys you watch and it's like, whoa, that guy's.
Yeah.
Seems like he's kind of going the other way now. And I don't know if it's a lockout coming in out of shape thing. What do you think, House?
I think,
out of shape thing? Or?
I think it's more psychological than anything is you know, my pop analysis.
Just
he was
he
the alpha
the
dog in New York. He arrived in New York, king of New York, and played that way. He was legitimately in the MVP conversation the first 3 months of last season. Carmelo came in, and he hasn't really been the same since.
Do you feel like he's gone, like, put it this way. Let's say you were still the Phoenix GM and you would match that contract. 5 years, $100 million, no insurance. It's year two.
Yeah.
You can't feel good about that contract.
No, and that's why, you know, that's why we didn't ultimately feel comfortable re-signing him at that number. He had a microfracture surgery on his knee, I want to say 7-8 years ago.
Right.
So we loved Amari. We wanted him on our team, but at that price, without insurance on his knees, it was too big of a risk. And it's just the way it goes. I mean, players start to fade a little bit, and he's losing a little bit of his athleticism. I think there's some of what you're saying, House, in terms of Carmelo's got the ball. You know, they didn't really have a point guard until Lynn arrived. You know, that there was no spacing. Chandler came. Chandler was now the role guy instead of Amari. He's been lost this year for sure. But the thing I really like about Amari is he's matured more than anybody could ever imagine. I mean, if you knew the background, and we all know some of it, but if you really knew the background of where Amari came from, where he was early in his career, where he is now, he's a leader. He works hard. He genuinely cares about guys. He's a really good teammate, and he wasn't that way early in his career. So I think he'll work through it and do the best he can to try to make all the pieces fit. But that knee is definitely a concern.
Well, you know, defense wins championships to a large degree. He is a below-average defender 3 years ago, and I think he's worse now. Carmelo doesn't really try all the time on defense. Like, can you even compete for a title?
Well, that's why they signed Chandler, you know, to cover up for both those guys.
And I actually feel bad for Chandler.
I don't.
He's guarding three guys, basically. He's guarding the entire front court of the other team.
I think it's. I'm going to acknowledge how ridiculous this sounds, but Lynn's arrival and those guys kind of invigoration that he's kind of brought to that team in terms of finally having a leader on the floor.
Yeah.
But also it's contagious how on both ends effort. You know, there's definitely an increase in effort on both ends of the floor.
I agree with that.
Chandler's been unbelievable since Lynn arrived. And that was also when Amari and Carmelo went out.
Yeah.
So he's the role guy. He's getting dunks. He's shooting like 70% or something.
Did you do that game last night?
No.
Did you see it?
No. I flew in yesterday.
Who did we have on today who said that what LeBron and Wade did to Lynn was a little Mully said that.
Yeah.
A little reminiscent to Pippen and Jordan and Kukoc in the Olympics, just being like, let's just destroy this guy.
Yeah.
Apparently he was terrible. I mean, Lynn's tired, obviously they played a bunch of games, but
he's tired, and the speed of Miami's defense when the first time you see it is shocking. You know, they cover so much ground, and it's not just LeBron and Wade. Joel Anthony and Bosch jumping out on pick and roll.
Chalmers picked his pocket a couple times.
Chalmers can defend
early.
Yeah, that's not good.
But Miami is by far the best team in the NBA, and their defense last year was totally underrated, and everyone talked about Chicago's defense, and they were ranked higher in the regular season. But we saw what happened in that series. Miami just completely locked up the Rose and the Bulls. And so when they turn it up a notch, they're scary.
So you have them as the heavy favorite right
heavy
now?
Heavy favorite.
Really?
Oh, man.
Now, this feels like a little bit of a jinx.
Is it a jinx?
I have them winning the title. I'm working on a paperback for my basketball book. I'm already writing the chapter about Miami. Was that the greatest team ever?
There you go. Who can beat them? You know, barring injury. Obviously, in this season, the lockout year, crazy things are happening. Who knows?
Wouldn't Wade though make your top five list of guys who might have trouble holding up this season? You put him in top five, right?
Yeah.
Of all the key guys, I feel like Bynum's on that list.
Yeah,
I think Nowitzki's on that list. Like even yesterday when we did the pod with him, he was talking about how physically it was the first time he'd ever really felt like, oh crap, my body's not responding at all here. Now he's in a better place, but you know, I really. It sounds like a cliche, but it's going to come down to who's healthy.
Well, if Miami's healthy, I just don't see, you know, the Bulls would have a shot. The Bulls are, you know, really, really good every night. They defend. Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose, you know, but the memory of that five-game playoff series last year is still fresh for everybody. And it's, you know, I don't know if Chicago has enough weapons offensively, but it'll be fun to see it all unfold. Celtics, I read your stuff yesterday. Are do they have a run?
Yeah, as a former GM, you thought I went too far.
I thought you went too far because...
I probably did.
Well,
I was trying to have fun with the column, write a funny column, and kind of go totally overboard. I tried to set it up at the top. Maybe I went too far.
No. Well, when I say you went too far, what I mean by that is I think Boston still has a run. Like, I obviously the column is in fun, you know, and it was very amusing. Having sat in Danny's seat, I feel for him because that's the kind of stuff you face as a GM, and you just have to laugh it off and, frankly, not read it if you can avoid that stuff. But it's all part of it. You know that as a GM, that's what you're getting into. But I still think the Celtics have a run because when they are healthy, you can see glimpses of it. And if they're healthy at the right time and Rondo's playing his game and Allen's shooting well and KG's rested, I mean, those are all big ifs. But if that's the case, they're still going to be hard to beat. They're really well coached and they play defense and they know how to do it.
As a Celtics fan, like just watching this team pre-Perkins, and Perkins was hurt for most of last year, but he had come back and was healthy, but they could always protect the paint and the rim. And that was kind of the hallmark of all of those teams. And after that Perkins trade, when Shaq wasn't able to come back, they just lost. Teams can beat them at the rim now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they lost Game 7 of the 2010 Finals. The
offensive
Lakers were at the rim.
Yeah.
And if you can't protect that, I just don't think you have a chance. And I don't see how KG at this point in his career, Jermaine O'Neal at this point of his career, Chris Wilcox, I mean, just it's going to be too easy for them to get out.
Well, and it hurts them at the other end, too.
They don't get second chance anything in the point
other than Rondo's layups.
Yeah.
And they don't go to the foul line. They're like 27th, I think, in the league in free throw attempts. So, I mean, I did their game the other night, and, you know, you look through all the stats. It's kind of bizarre. I think they're 7th in field goal percentage, 8th in assists. So you look at those numbers, you go, okay, they execute, but they're 29th in scoring.
Yep.
And, you know, near the bottom in free throw attempts. So they just get nothing easy. That's the biggest problem. They can execute, but you've got to get easy baskets in the NBA, and they don't get those anymore.
It's similar to the Lakers, where if you just don't get, fast breaks are off the table for both teams.
Mm-hmm. Both teams are in the
unless
same
Rondo area. Is running, that's it. They don't get any fast points
the
at
difference,
all.
The difference, though, is the Lakers still get inside stuff.
Well, that's
with
what I was going to say. The Lakers can still get second chance points and tip-ins and stuff like that. The Celtics don't get those. It's one shot, and either it goes in or it doesn't, and then now you're playing defense again.
That's right.
We both like the Lakers. We were talking about this yesterday in the pod that they're a little bit sneaky. You figure they're going to add a player with that trade, except they're going to get somebody. But when the playoffs, it slows down. You're in the 80s now. You're not in the high 90s. I think a team like Oklahoma City is going to beat them every time. I just think the athleticism is too much. But for, in general, if they can do that slow down.
In the playoffs?
Yeah.
I don't think that. Part of it is because we don't know yet who that next player is going to be.
True. All right. We'll do it to be continued. Do you agree with that?
They need a guard for sure. They got to get some help. But I agree with the fact that they're kind of under the radar right now.
They can win any one game.
They can win any game.
Yeah.
And their defense is really good. I wouldn't want to play them in a best of seven series, but they do need a guard badly.
The other thing is if they can get Gasol going again, and he's shown some flashes, but if they can get him back to being a 2010 guy, and the way Bynum, this is the best stretch Bynum's ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's shown some limitations.
Bynum?
You know? Yeah.
He can't pass out of the double
team. Pass at all.
Yeah.
Seems like he travels every time. They just choose not to call. But his footwork's not great.
The team changed when Odom got traded because, remember, Bynum didn't even used to play down the stretch.
Yeah.
And Gasol was really the five.
Yeah.
And Odom was the four, and the floor was spread. Gasol has taken the biggest hit from Odom's absence. His role has changed, and so it's tough for him to be a 20-10 guy because his role is so different, and he's away from the basket a lot more. Bynum is kind of occupying that space where he used to be more often. So I love Gasol. I think he's fantastic.
That's why the Celtics, I would trade Rondo for Gasol in a millisecond, of course.
As long as it's part of a
Rondo
a multiple.
And Jermaine's expiring for Gasol. Take him. I now have one of the best skilled big men in the league.
To use your phrase, which team says no? You think Boston says no on that?
You know, I think it almost comes down to a money thing because Gasol makes like 19 this year, 19 next year, like 20 the year after.
Yeah.
And Rondo's at like 10.5, 11, 11.5. And if you're the Lakers, you save $16 million a year for the next 2 years after that trade. They're way over the tax.
Yeah, and you've got your point guard for the future. And
you know, I guess it comes down to would you rather have like the Josh McRoberts, Jermaine O'Neal combo in the play, you know, at that position over Gasol? And then you upgrade from Fisher and Blake to Rondo.
Yeah.
Like, what makes your team better? The Rondo-Kobe thing would be really interesting.
I'm not sure
that works. Rondo's such a weird guy.
Do you think Kobe would trust Rondo? That's what I immediately think of.
I actually think he would make him shoot. I don't think he would accept the part when Rondo just says, I'm not going to shoot these open 15-footers. I think Kobe would.
I think it's a bad fit, Rondo, with the Lakers.
Really? You know,
they have no shooting. They're like 29th or 30th in 3-point shooting in the league, and in the half court they don't run. What I like about Rondo with the Celtics is that he's a one man fast break. But if it's not there, he's got Allen and Pierce in the trail.
Yeah.
It's like a semi transition game where they launch threes, and the Lakers wouldn't have that. I think it would be congested with Bynum, Kobe, and Rondo. I don't know. I mean, you never know until you try. But I don't look at that as a green mix.
I did some sniffing around since we've been here, and it really doesn't seem like the Lakers are going to trade Gasol this year. I mean, if it happens, I think it'll be this summer. When you look at how Mitch handled the whole thing, didn't really say he wouldn't trade him. Like, don't you think there maybe would have been some value for him saying, look, we're not trading him. He's going to be on the team this whole season. I don't want to. If you read another fake trade rumor, it's not happening. But obviously, since he didn't say that, that makes me think he does want to trade him, right?
It's a tough spot to be in.
You were in that spot with Amari.
Yeah. And you really can't. If you say we're not trading him, and then you do,
you look like a liar.
You look like a liar, and your players know that.
Yeah.
And your fans know that.
Yeah.
You have to gain the trust of not only your players, but the people who buy season tickets. If you lie to them, it's not a good thing. Okay? So if you are in that position, you kind of have to just be noncommittal about it. The problem now is even if you don't say anything, there's all kinds of stories every day people just writing stuff, blogs.
Especially if it's the Lakers.
Yeah. Especially if it's the Lakers, that's right. And so there's people are going to speculate constantly, and there's it's hard to differentiate the speculation between the facts. And yet, you know, the players have to live through all that stuff, and it's really hard. I love what Kobe did, though. Kobe kind of took a bullet for the team, and I think it was premeditated. I think he realized, I got to do something to get our guys together. I thought it was a great move.
Me too.
And yet he never said, don't trade Powell. It was more like, if you're going to trade him, then do it. But it wasn't.
Yeah,
I never feel
true.
Like he really full-fledged went, look, we're not trading Powell. He's one of the best guys. I hate this. There's nobody we could get back that I would like more than him. MJ was kind of in this role a little bit with Pippen. MJ's last year, 98, you were on the team. It was the last 2 years. There was a million Pippen rumors. Mm-hmm. Like he almost went
Seattle.
For Sean Kemp at one point and all that stuff. And somehow that team rebounded.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And Scotty was just, like, so angry that
year,
right?
Yeah, he was angry. His contract, you know, he signed a long-term deal, and he was way underpaid.
Right.
And they wouldn't extend him or redo the contract, and he was upset. And that was where Phil was just genius. I mean, he used that to bring the team together. And
what do you mean?
He just... You know, Scotty was one of us, and Scotty was going through his own personal stuff, and we sort of rallied behind Scotty. And, you know, everyone knew he was totally underpaid, and he was everybody's favorite teammate because he was the guy constantly finding everybody, and he's the nicest guy, he's a great, great teammate. So Phil just kind of recognized all those dynamics and kind of used it, and he wasn't always supportive of Scotty. When he needed to, you know, get him going, he'd scold him and say the right things to motivate him, but for the most part, Phil would use anything to kind of create that cohesion.
A pivotal thing was when he gave Scotty for Christmas a copy of The Grapes of Wrath. I don't know. It seems like something he would have done. Some weird book. I wonder what weird book he would have given him that Christmas. 15th anniversary of... Was that 97 you made the game winner?
97, yeah. 15 years.
And you don't think about that. You think about 2 for 13.
I think about the 24th anniversary of the Final Four. 24th, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one I think of more
often. Now it's been enough time. Like, is that all those seasons starting to blur together? Or like what do you remember now from 15 years ago?
I remember all those finals games and the ups and downs. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to really understand, unless you've really been there, the pressure of the finals and the roller coaster that you're on is really incredible. And especially now, it's gotten worse because of the coverage.
We saw LeBron melt from it last year. I mean, he really literally melted.
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens. It happens to... Even LeBron, and so it happens, you know, I had some horrible finals games where I got into a rut and I couldn't get out of it, and ultimately you've got to find a way to just kind of free your mind up and basically say, like, what was the movie, Risky Business?
Yeah.
It'd be like Joel, you got to say, you know, sometimes you got to say, what the heck,
or
whatever it was he said. And you literally have to let yourself go, forget the repercussions, immerse yourself in the game, but with the glare of the spotlight, especially now, it's a hard thing to do, and you see people succumb to it all the time.
And I think those were the two most watched finals ever to that point.
What's that, the Bulls and
the two
Jazz?
Bulls-Jazz.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, and the reason for the ratings was, you know, your vicious blood feud with John Stockton. Everyone talks about Tupac and Biggie. Nobody talks about Stockton Kerr.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, my God. It's amazing there wasn't guns pulled in the locker room or something. What happens when you see him now? You're like, hey, John, what's happening?
No, John's awesome. First of all, a ton of respect.
But
for him.
Total cheap shot artist.
He was dirty.
Yeah, he was dirty.
Yeah, but
kicking the balls on picks and stuff, right?
Yeah.
What were his tricks? Little trips.
He'd pass to the post, and then he'd you know, you react a little bit to help, and he'd grab your jersey and pull you that way and cut behind you. You know, stuff like that. Smart.
Yeah, that doesn't sound dirty.
The refs never knew because he looked like just like a nice guy from Washington. Yeah.
Did you hear his Hall of Fame speech?
Yes.
2 years
ago?
One of the best speeches I've ever heard.
Yeah, who knew?
And who knew he had that kind of personality? But as a player, he was so locked in. He gave you nothing to the media.
He picked the wrong year to give that speech.
Oh, because of
Wasn't
Michael.
Wasn't that the same Jordan year?
Yeah.
Everyone kind of concentrated on the weird Jordan speech. I think you weren't surprised by the Jordan speech.
Not really.
Kind of fit in with...
Yeah, that's who he is. He's in terms of the competitiveness, that's never going to leave him. And that speech was all about his competitiveness.
He's been taking some heat this year about the Bobcats and just, you know, it's the worst team in the league and all that stuff. Like, I actually think he's doing the right thing to some degree. Like, you want to bottom out. You don't want to be in the middle. That's what my fear with the Celtics is. You're in the middle. Yeah. That's trouble.
It's a tough spot to be in. And you know, if they get Anthony Davis out of this, then it will evolve.
Then you're a genius.
Yeah, then you're a genius. And that's the tricky part about the NBA is that you can position yourself to, you know, to be bad for a year or two and clear cap room, and there you are. But if you don't get Kevin Durant with the second pick if you're Oklahoma City, or if you don't get, you know, David Robinson if you're the Spurs, or Tim Duncan, if you win the lottery in the wrong year, it does you nothing.
Here's a good example. Minnesota.
Oh.
Let's say Wes Johnson was really good. That team's team has three stars now. Yeah. And it was just luck of the draw. They picked I would have taken Cousins, but you figure like that guy's at least he's gonna shoot threes and rebound and be a small forward, and he's just not good.
He struggled.
He's not good.
I'm glad you said Minnesota and not Washington.
Your team. Oh, no.
That's your squad. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and John Wall, you know, the jury's still out.
You could have Blake Griffin, or you could have had Kyrie Irving.
Blake was the next year.
You had Blake, and then John Wall, and then Kyrie Irving.
When you win the lottery.
Right, when you win the lottery.
Actually, if you go back over NBA history, you can pick, like the Clippers. You know, they got Olawakandi that year.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and if it had been, I don't know, a year before, it was Duncan or what. You know what I mean? There's it's so random, and so there's definitely a lot of luck involved. But you have to position yourself and do what Oklahoma City has done, which is, you know, make all the right decisions when you are drafting. But you got to get lucky and end up with a guy like Durant, because there's only, I mean, how many real difference makers are there in the entire league?
Or you have to get lucky and have one good guy, and then the league voids a trade, and then you land the second guy.
That works too.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or not. What would have been your reaction if you thought you had a deal and then it got vetoed?
It's so tricky.
And you can't say anything because it's $1 million fine.
You can't say anything. It's so tricky because nobody really knows, you know, what went on behind the scenes, but in my mind, if I'm a GM and I'm talking to New Orleans, the first thing I'm going to say is, do you have clearance? Do you have the authority to make this deal? And assuming that was the case, then, you know, Houston and LA understandably were furious. And those are the reports. Now, like I said, who really knows what went on?
Maybe Houston dodged a bullet with that trade? They've given up a lot for Gasol.
They're giving up a lot, but I still think Gasol's top 10 player in the league. And that's the thing, and you know Daryl pretty well.
Yeah.
They have not had a star. Now, they're doing great this year.
Yeah.
They're doing as well as they possibly can. They're one of the big success stories in the league.
I feel like Lowry might be a star.
What if Lowry and Gasol were playing together right now?
That's true. That is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, he also thought he was going to get Nene if the Gasol thing. I've heard mixed reports on that. He says that would happen, so he would add Lowry, Nene, and Gasol. That's probably
pretty good.
Seed.
Yeah. But the whole competitive balance thing that we've sort of made an issue during the lockout, to me, just doesn't add up because of what we just talked about. There's 10 or 12 guys in the league who make the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah.
There's 30 teams. You know, so there's only... You know, there's 18 teams in theory that aren't going to have one of those guys, no matter what the CBA says. Now, maybe this new CBA will allow the team to hang on to them once they have them, you know, the stars.
Right.
But you can't really achieve competitive balance unless you have like 30 LeBrons, and then everybody's got one. But it's just doesn't work.
It does seem like one of the strategies, like Houston is a good example of this, is you don't pay. Your cap is basically the $5 to $8 million guys, and you get like six of those guys versus building everything around the two guys. I think I could see some teams. I think Indiana might try that.
Well, the worst thing the teams do is when they overpay the those guys.
The non-star.
The non-star. Right. When those guys get 10 or 12
the Danny Granger
year.
Type, right. Who's right. a good player, but
very
not
good.
$13
Joe
million player.
Iguodala,
yeah.
you know, really right. good players, but not guys who can take you over the top. And when you overpay those guys, now you get hamstrung and you're in some trouble.
So. Yeah. Well, what do you think, Odin? Can we just put him on Phoenix now?
Oh, you mean with the training staff?
Can we just do it now? Like, just...
He just had another microfracture.
I know.
Surgery.
Just give him to the Phoenix staff. Let him rebuild them. They rebuilt the $6 million man. They rebuilt Steve Nash. They rebuilt Grant Hill.
I don't know if they're miracle workers, though. They're great. They're
phenomenal. Three microfracture surgeries.
Yeah. It's just sad. It's such a yeah. sad story. You know.
It's the poor Portland fans. You played there.
Yeah. Great city to play in.
So many hits they've taken. Yeah. They've taken more hits than any NBA franchise. They lose Brandon Roy.
Yeah.
Odin,
yes.
Simbui.
Uh-huh.
Who else am I missing? Oh, they lose the coin flip, I think. It was the LaRue Martin. Oh, no, they won. They picked LaRue Martin. Just that, somebody needs to write a Portland book. I can't even keep track of all that.
Yeah.
There should be like an oral history
yeah.
or something.
Well, those fans are amazing up there. They support their team
yeah.
so well. And it's been a really successful franchise.
Yeah.
You know, but they've kept their head above water the last couple of years. But, you know, they've had some tough breaks.
What do you think of for sleepers? Anybody? I have
you know,
one. We have the same one.
You got Memphis, right? You like Memphis?
Or? I still think Memphis is... I want no part of them in round one.
I worry about their shooting. They're like, right at the bottom in three-point shooting. But they're really good inside with those two guys. When Zach Randolph comes back, they've got to...
Do I totally overrate O.J. Mayo? Because I still feel like at any time he could be a 20-point guy who makes 45% of his threes. I'm just waiting for it to happen.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
I keep waiting. Like, this is the week it happens.
Yeah. Can Dallas be considered a sleeper or no? They're the defending champs, but not many people are talking about them.
I truly believe that they're going to try to trade Marion over these next 2 weeks for the cap space.
And go get Howard and...
Yeah, I think he would give up this. He's already kind of borderline giving up the season anyway with the Chandler not bringing him back. So at this point, like, why not?
You know what's amazing, though? Their defensive numbers are better this year than they were last year.
Is that true?
Yeah.
You know, because that Jan Mahimny is not bad.
He's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's more of an offensive-minded guy than Chandler. He'll make a 15-foot jump shot. Carlisle can coach. That team executes.
Oof.
They are beautifully put together. And I'm shocked. When they lost Chandler, I said, no way. They can't win the West.
Yeah.
Now that I watch them, I think they can win the West just because... They've got closers, they execute so well, and they defend. They were, as of the other night, they were number one in the league in field goal percentage defense, which is remarkable given that they lost Tyson.
Getting zero from Lamar Odom.
Nothing.
I mean, like,
yeah.
like this. Dirk,
yeah.
when we had Dirk on yesterday, he's like, you know, and Lamar's been up and down, and I'm thinking, like, where's the up then? Was there an up? Did I miss the up? But you're right. I mean, we saw it in 99. Experience.
Yeah.
We would call it the old fart thing.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the old fart teams.
Right, San Antonio.
That's how I like. That's my sleeper, San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
For the old fart thing.
But as a sleeper to, you know, make it to the finals, I don't think it's good.
We were talking about this with, I think, Bucher yesterday about saw Duncan in person on Saturday. And it's like, you know, he's done now. He's like, he's at that, he could retire at any time, but he's still so smart and knows exactly where to go. He doesn't, you know, he's dragging one knee. I think it's his left knee, but dragging it. But he feels like he can play until he's 45 and do what he's doing this year. I don't think he's going to lose anything athletically.
He loves the game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what separates him from a lot of seven-footers. There's a lot of seven-footers who don't really love basketball, I think. I think they're told, you know, in junior high, hey, you're tall, you should play.
Right.
And then they realize, oh, I can make some money doing this. And you know, but Tim Duncan is like a basketball junkie. I mean, he loves it. And so he is going to play, I think, longer because that's who he is. He's a player. He loves the team. He loves the whole idea of being part of something. So yeah, he's still effective, even
and still fun to play with.
Yeah, great to play with. Great passer.
That team has. I just love their chemistry.
Yeah.
Like if you can pick a team to be on, it would be this person. Yeah. We got to wrap it up, Steve Kerr. Good luck with the DVA Rising Star Challenge tonight. What is it?
BBVA
Rising Star Challenge. Take it easy on Blake.
Yeah.
Keep
Blake's play Blake for
down.
2 minutes and take him out.
Blake's not going to play much.
Good. Yeah. Be careful of him. I mean, Blake is like giving every Clipper fan a heart attack because he's trying to dunk on everybody.
I don't even know why he's playing in this game, to be honest with you. It's his third year.
Right.
Supposed to be rookie sophomore.
Dubious.
And he's playing Sunday. Like, guys who play Sunday should get an exemption.
How weird if Rubio wins the Rookie of the Year this year, which he probably won't, but it would be three rookie years in a row from the 2000...
From the same class.
Nine class.
That's right.
Pretty
amazing. Bizarre.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right, House.
Yeah.
So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 podcasts out of a 24-hour stretch here. I'm a little winded.
I'm a little winded, too. I'm glad you did all the talking.
I need some caffeine.
Yeah, me too.
What would you say, if we do this next year, I feel like we could just go for 5 hours a day.
We should.
We should get everybody.
Yeah, I want everybody.
Yeah.
We walked down the hallway and Kevin Durant was sitting there. I said,
I almost
why can't we have him? Let's grab him.
We should have gotten him.
John Wall was down the hallway. Johnny, come sit with us for 10 minutes.
Yeah, next year we're going to do this. This was kind of a test run for us. Next year we're going to do this
better. I'm going to call it a wild success.
Well, next year's in Houston.
Great.
That's good for you. One of the barbecue capitals of the world.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. So what next year we'll just try to get like 10 All-Stars and a bunch of legends.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds perfect.
All right, cool. Anything else? And we need to eat. I need to feed you. It's like when my dog Rufus at 4 o'clock just starts staring at us. We're like, are you hungry, Rufus? What's
staring.
Going on?
I
know it's turning to Steve Kerr.
A deep stare.
You were staring at Steve Kerr like he was like a spare rib.
Cheeseburger.
I'm not listening to Steve.
I listen to everything.
Chicken sandwich. Chick-fil-A?
Oh, Chick-fil-A. Let's go do that.
Subway.
Subway is always a good time.
Maybe we do both.
We could do both.
Bunch of things. Right. I'm ready to eat.
Okay.
Thanks for being my co-host the last 2 days.
Oh, always my pleasure.
All right.
Yeah.
Take it.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNradio.com.
Peace out.